is the Gunner. The Gunner's theme song.
John. Shit. I see how today's gonna go.
Tell me you've never been in a discotheque overseas when this came on, acting like you were cool.
I can't stand those guys. Bon Jovi. Not me, man.
You know,
but, if I was going to listen to it, I'd rather listen to Bon Jovi than Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, Springsteen can't sing, even though they're both from Jersey. Bon Jovi, he made a ton of money. He's trying to buy he's an arena football league owner, and he's looking at buying, some other sports team. So he's done, saved his money, did okay.
Yeah, and he acted, he did some acting.
I want to say his kid played at Notre Dame.
Oh, he did? I didn't know that.
Where the hell? No, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Jesse Bon Jovi, two-time letter winner at Poly Prep in New Jersey.
Huh.
And playing, I think he walked on at Notre Dame. How about that?
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. So how was your weekend?
It was good. It was just relaxing. Yeah. Had a breakfast with Christina's.
Oh, you like? Oh, yeah. Mike starts tweeting pictures of... tell everybody, what was that stuff you were eating, man? That was like, the only thing that he didn't put in there was the ambulance on its way to a heart attack victim. Because it was serious. It was serious food, man. Serious food. What was it? What were you eating?
I had chicken fried steak, but Gary uses a really good prime rib cut steak, and then he pounds it out, and it's just like melts in your mouth, tender. Ron had the... He used the blueberry pancakes with caramelized bananas. It was freaking ridiculous. Oh my goodness.
Mike starts posting these pictures. You're like, holy heart attack.
That was a great breakfast though. God. With the chicken fried steak, ribeye steak.
Oh,
with,
the best.
The country gravy on it. Oh, homemade country gravy. Yeah. Dude.
It's all of a sudden it's like, Mike Musselman's posting photographs, so it's like, it's always going to be interesting, okay? It's never going to be boring when the Gunner goes live or starts posting stuff. So I always feel that I should check it out. I have a responsibility to check it out. So.
Yeah, that was something else, though. That was crazy.
Now, how do you feel about the before we talk baseball?
I didn't know we were going to talk baseball.
You didn't?
I just thought you were telling me.
The day of reckoning. Hey, the day of reckoning is here.
Yeah. The cotton taking skills that you have are pretty good, man.
The day of reckoning. What? What do you mean? Who's in first place? That's what I got last week. I said, yo, bros, you know your number. It's coming. The day of reconciliation is coming. Anyway, just for the record, the Yankees in first place now. And we'll talk about
it. By a half a game.
Doesn't matter. That's what I got last week. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Who's above who in the standings? Okay. All right.
Oh, I see that's who we're going to play today. Okay.
You're
setting the ground rules.
I just, trust me. It's like, hey, the ground rules haven't changed. We all know that.
I bet you last night before you're going to bed was like Christmas.
Oh, what? Are you kidding me? I was.
Yeah,
like,
you were like, I can't wait to get up in the morning.
Oh, you know
giggle,
how when
giggle.
When your daughter was a baby, sometimes they just lay in their crib and they'd just be making noise and playing, and they were just so happy. That was me yesterday.
Yeah, I bet.
Jack was like, whoa.
Giggle all day yesterday.
What's going on? I'm not going to get my ass beat tonight. This is awesome, man. Gave me a little bit of steak that he made. Why is he so happy? Jack has no idea.
Yeah. Little does he know.
Little does he know.
Ulterior, ulterior motive, Mac.
Exactly. But I interviewed a guy from SoftRep who writes for them. He's a former Marine NCO named Alex Hollings. And so he's telling me that one of the things he did last week was he went to a prison in Georgia that has was purchased after it was shut down, and in, outside of a small town, and it's now being transformed into a special forces and I guess law enforcement training grounds with ranges, live fire ranges inside the prison, and whatnot. And I thought, they bastards stole our idea, Mike. And he says they've got subsidies from the state to go ahead and make this thing go because it's outside of a small town. They're bringing all these jobs,
right.
Carpenters, people that work on the at the facility. After the prison left, it was just sitting there rotting, and now they're going to use it to do training. And I said, you know what? I've got a business idea, man. It's a regional police training facility. With some kind of, it could be an old school, it could be an old factory. This happens to be a prison, but it's a place. And I told him you describing the place that you used in you went to in San Diego, right?
Yes, the Seagal Studios, the hyper realistic training.
Right, and that was just his movie studio, right?
Yeah, that was his lot that he did a lot of filming for. I forget which show that he's really big on, something Mars or something with a girl's name in it, Mars or something like that.
So that's what he was. So you and who were you with when you went down there to do that training?
I was with 3-5.
Okay, all right. The and so that's what they're doing. They've combined that with special effects. And prop and scene people from Hollywood to be able to design customized training. I'm like, these bastards stole Gunner's idea. So we have to get on.
Not my idea.
Oh, it's your idea.
I mean, good form. If they train people, you know, that's a great. That's perfect, man. I mean, I'm happy for them if they can. They can do what they wanted to do. So,
I know, but Mike,
not my idea.
What we have to do is we take that idea and we just start cloning it around the country, and we do it in like an upper corner of Arkansas. So Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, and Kentucky can send people to the facility. So we have the throughput so that we can make it work. Right, we get the tax subsidies of the state, and then police departments, big, small, whatever, they fax us, say, this is what we want to work on. We say, okay, this is what the scenario look like. You go ahead and tweak it. We then go ahead and produce that. They do both. They do a non-live fire version of it, then they do a live fire version of it, and they go back to their community. All they have to do is pay for it. They don't have to build it. But even if they want to build it, we'll have a consulting arm that will walk them through how to build it. Like how to build a football stadium. You know, you don't do that on your own. You hire consultants that build a lot of stadiums. So we'll be all about it.
The easiest part is always building the facility. That's the easiest part. The hardest part is building the training standards, the connecting file, you know, and then you need a guy that knows how to link and to layer the technologies. So use current technologies in those type of scenarios that benefit. You know, so like I said, the easiest parts are building the facility. But the hard part is linking it to training objectives, building that training objective standard. What that looks like, how do you get there, and all those things.
I know, but we know those people.
Yeah.
We know those people. So, I'm not saying, I'm just saying that there's a business there, and you begin to offer it to law enforcement people. And so, and then Alex said, well, how much does that cost? I said, well, it's a shitload less than the settlement that you're going to have to pay to a family.
That's right.
Right? It's a shitload less than the damage that your merchants are going to have to pay. So when you roll this out in front of the citizens of Minneapolis and say, you know, this is the way we've trained in the past, but in conjunction with McGunner tactical training, we have now signed up to send all our officers on a monthly basis through a day of training at this site in which they tailor things to our specific scenarios designed to get our police officers' pulses up, and we commit to the city and the citizens of Minneapolis, St. Paul, that we're gonna get our officers through that. It's gonna cost us a little bit, but we're prepared to shoulder that burden because we owe you more. And policing has now got to be different than simply going to the range and going through that training and then doing video training. That's not good enough anymore. We have a better way. We're committed to that. How about that, Mike?
Yeah, but you have inherent problems built into this program. Or like, okay, so as Marines, if people didn't meet standards, what happens? If they're officers, we remove them. If they're staff NCOs, we re-educated them. If they were enlisted types, you know, we could do remedial stuff. We could do all stuff. We didn't have boundaries. We didn't have limitations. The police have those things. They're called unions. They're called, you know, all of this other, you have the civil liberties, you know, guys that are going to be on your ass, the way you do things. They're going to be scrutinizing the way you do things. You know, like you said, ACLU is going to be down your throat. You're going to have the union saying that this is not fair. You can't fire an officer because they don't know how to be a police officer. What? Excuse me?
What? Yeah,
you know,
what?
These are those things. But you know, that's the reality
right.
of what you're going to face.
Right. If you fail, you either have to be reassigned to a non-tactical billet, placed on probation, put through rudimentary training, or terminated. Or you go into an administrative status, and that's where you stay. But you can't, because look, not everybody is a gunslinger, right? In the Marine Corps, you know, every Marine and rifleman.
Can't put a gun on in public. Yeah, you can't wear a gun in public,
yeah.
Man.
You're an administrator, you know, you can't interact with the public with a weapon. You know, it's just not your gig. So, you are right. You want to, you know, the things that inhibit kind of training like that. Yeah, but how given the world that police officers live in today, how do you not begin to take them down that road in their training? And I keep waiting in this thing in Minneapolis for them to roll out this. Well, this is the kind of tactical, you know, and there, Mike, it's like. Yeah, he went through this course and this course and this course. And he's a Fulop Brown police officer. No, he's not. He's a novice. He's a novice.
And yeah.
If you don't get them, again, just like we found out when we, you know, when we get to 1,000 shades of gray as the insurgency starts in Iraq, you know, what do? The Marine Corps, I mean, and I have to say, reacts institutionally pretty quick. Hey, we need to train to this, man. You can't just excrete them over to this and expect them to deal with it because it's not what we train for. And the Army did it and the Marine Corps did it in Vietnam. You know, they built Asian bills.
Yeah.
You went and trained in Hawaii, in the jungle of Hawaii, before you went to Vietnam. And so,
did I ever tell you what one of my business ideas were that I was talking about and I wanted to do?
Other than the strip bar business?
Other than that stuff?
No. Only that.
One of them was, what I wanted to do was go out and I wanted to lease or purchase whatever would have been more feasible, but a ship, a U.S. Navy mothballed ship, not too old, and then reconfigure it and work with companies like Raytheon and other Lockheed Martin, the guys that did a lot of the outfitting for command and control stuff, and build this ship to suit that. So it'd have all the newest gear on there, and then we could use it for a testing platform for new command and control stuff. And then use either the Merchant Marine Force, guys that are going through school, to actually navigate, you know, use this thing at low cost for me, and then, you know, do all of this stuff. And what it eventually do, and then lease it back to the government to train its command and control structure on board ship, because the problem was we didn't have a lot of Navy shipping to do this stuff. So right. It was always new where, you know, we get group guys on board ship, and then they had to, it was discovery learning. And let's say we had a very limited time because the Navy was only could be out of, you know, port for X amount of days. So you really got like 2-3 days and you really never learned anything. But with this program, we own the Marine Corps would own it. You know, they'd lease it. And so it was always off the coast of California. You can use it in conjunction with all these big exercises, Steel Night, you know, whatever it may be, meth level exercises. And then bring the meth command group or whatever on board ship to do the command and control from a ship. Always. And hell, you could have, it'd be anchored right off the coast of Camp Pendleton or wherever it was needed. And then, you know, but then have all of these different suites built into this boat. And the nice thing about it is then as technology and everything else, you can't outfit a Navy ship like that overnight.
Right.
It takes, right. You know, a shit, an act of Congress. But have the main contractors, the guys that are building these programs, do that stuff all the time for us. And then you have a training program that you own. You could do things. You could change on the whim, you know. And then it was started out as kind of a joke. And then when I was talking to, you know, General Brodnetta, General Tooling about it, they were like, let's do it, you know. When are we doing this? And
people know people. And then I just, people know people that make things like that happen.
Yeah, and then I just kind of lost. It was like, you know, that's too much work.
All right, here's a text message. Standards are set and reviewed by each police department. That's your issue. That's their issue, not yours. Yeah, but you know what? They've got to get it. And you know what? If you run the training facility, you could tailor, you know, what you do relative to, you know, their standards. But the thing is, most of them don't have a live fire facility with actors that can produce something like this. They just don't have it. They can go shoot.
And we're not talking about police departments. We're talking about, no, I think you're diving down, way down. I'm pulling back a little bit, and I would pull their trainers, their train officers, their TOs. And that's what I'd focus in a region, not every cop. I would build train the trainers.
Yeah, but they don't have they don't have the facility. So I understand the train the trainer piece, certainly. I just don't think so. We're going to train you to do something that you can't go. Well, maybe you could go back and do. You could throw something together. But I would say that, you know, you locate these things in small towns that have an abandoned high school, or look for maybe the right thing is look for prisons that have been shut down. And then you're going to get state grants and things like that, because you're going to blow economic life back into a community, Mike. And that's what one of the things that Alex Hollings, who writes for SoftRep, said. He said, you know, I didn't realize at first I was just going to see this place. After I talked to these guys and saw what they were doing on my way out, I stopped and started talking to people about it. And they were so excited that, you know, they had brought economic hope. That there were going to be jobs, that there was a future here with businesses and other businesses that were coming to support this business. So it was pretty interesting in terms of the number of things that have been leveraged by these guys to create this facility. And again, just you know, in flyover country where jobs are leaving and kids grow up, and you know, it's like, well, I got to move to Dallas, or I've got to move to Birmingham or Atlanta. I can't stay here in this town. All of a sudden, you can stay in you can stay in the area. So it was a very interesting little piece that he said that embraced the things that you and I have spoken about here for a while. So
yeah, but I still see a very difficult road ahead if you're trying to regionalize that, because, you know, you're looking at what departments, and then, you know, you can bring in, and you'd have to have it pretty spaced out. So you'd give the opportunity to, you know, you'd have to build multiple, you know, of these training situations if you couldn't do it mobile.
So we have the prison, and there's a certain part of it that we camera up, like, you know, we did to our towns, right? Where you can, you know,
yeah, the place out, right? The tomato patch, right, for instance, the strawberry, the tomato,
right,
patch.
Right. So there's one. There's cameras throughout, so you can, you know, after we do it, we come back and we watch game film. There's a live fire part that you have to configure to be a live fire part because you can't have those rounds ricocheting all over the place. It doesn't work very well. So there's different modules to it, but it's a very unique idea with a, in my opinion, a ton of demand out there because this stuff continues to happen. And because of the post Ferguson, retirement rate among police officers, it's going to be out there because you're going to be constantly dealing with inexperienced police officers because of the turnover rate. Cause it's not an easy job. It's not an easy job. So anyway, I don't know. Just keep thinking about it down there in Texas. So what else? The president on Twitter
again? What Twitter?
Twitter? Trump? Are you kidding me? I'm very disappointed in China. Our foolish past leaders have allowed them to make hundreds of billions of dollars a year in trade, yet they do nothing for us with North Korea. Just talk. We will no longer allow this to continue. China could easily solve this problem.
Yeah, you know.
Don Trump speaks the truth on occasion.
He does. But, you know, and again, you know, I like John Kelly. I really do. I just think that he's got a long road in front of him, man. I mean, that is literally like herding cats, dude. That is one tough job.
Let's talk about that.
The staff of the West Wing.
Let's talk about that. When you first heard that news, and you know John Kelly for a long time, what were your thoughts?
Perfect man for the job, yeah. Perfect man for the job. Couldn't pick a better guy.
What were your thoughts?
But I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Yes, I would. My worst enemies, I'd like tee them up. Yeah, you're next. Get ready. And then you after them, and then you after them, and then you after them. All my enemies right in a row, my worst ones, get on in there. Because Trump's going to turn on you, and he's going to bust it off in your ass in front of the whole nation. I want to be around for that. And so every Marine and one of our friends that, you know, that know John Kelly, said the same thing. Oh man, closer to Trump. But Mike, describe General Kelly. He's a pretty savvy dude. He's not one of, like, you know, there's a lot of guys in the Marine Corps that are rule followers and they're really smart and they're rule followers and they're squeaky clean. And then there's other guys that aren't really like that. And Kelly, I mean, he gets out of high school and he becomes he joins a merchant marine. He's sailing around the Pacific. He's not of the squeaky clean crew.
No, he's not a ring knocker kind of guy. He's not a pedigree.
No.
He's a real Marine. He's a Marine Marine.
Yep. Marine's Marine. Comes home, joins the Marine Corps. At some point, you know, he's deciding whether to get out or stay in, and one of the senior enlisted guys in his company, I want to say he was in 3-4, says, "Hey, Kelly, you should go become an officer. You have what it takes to be a good one." And so he does. He goes to college. I think his mom was ill. Goes to college and joins, comes back in the Marine Corps as an officer. And the rest is history. But Kelly's a funny guy. I'll tell two quick stories. One.
Yeah, if you know him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he's a normal guy. So, he and Colonel Joe Dunford and I are having breakfast in the Chow Hall in Ramadi. And Kelly stands up. And one of the things you notice about being around Mattis, Kelly, Dunford is how disciplined they live their lives. Okay? They go to bed at a certain time to get a certain amount of sleep. Even if it's only for 15 minutes, they exercise every day. And they read. and they work, and I mean, it's just very impressive when you see them. And in that environment where there's so much stress and you're making life and death decisions, they know that if their brains aren't functioning properly, people are going to pay for it. So very impressive. So we get up, we go have breakfast at like 5:45 in the morning, and Kelly had to be someplace, so we're still eating, Dunford and I, and he says, "Hey, I got to get out of here." And with that, he stands up and he looks around and he says, and there's all these Marines eating breakfast, right? And he stands and he says, "Hey, anybody seen a pistol?" Right? And all these all these heads shoot up and look at him. And I had cereal in my mouth. I swear to God, I almost spit it across the table. Dunford just looks and he puts his head down and says, "You got to be kidding me." And Kelly, like, "Yeah, a pistol. Anybody see one?" And Marines would look at him and they're like, "Yeah, no." And then he looks, he goes, "What are you, crazy? You think I lost my pistol? That's ridiculous." And then he just walks out. He walks out of the chow hall and Marines start laughing, right? They start laughing. And then the other one is, he's a Red Sox fan, right? I found a baseball that started kind of a little McNamara tradition when I deployed, but I found a baseball in a building in Ramadi in 2004. And I took it to my desk and I had it with me. And it's amazing, if you were a guy who played, when you put a baseball in somebody's hands, it takes them away from Iraq. You're teleported to a baseball field of your dreams, of your childhood mostly. And we'd start talking baseball. So Kelly comes out of his office. So we work in this palace, in a corner of this palace. And Mike worked a couple compartments away from me. And you have these plywood walls up. Dunford's got a partition that may be 6 feet long that separates he and I. And Kelly comes walking out, and he comes walking in, and he's kind of, you could tell he's in one of his moods that he's going to screw with somebody. And he starts looking around, and he goes, "Mac, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm working, sir." And he looks down and he says, "Good one. Joe, what are you doing?" And he says, "I'm working, sir." He goes, "Good man, Joe." And I start laughing, and the Marines are laughing, and he grabs a baseball off my desk, goes, "Give me this." And so now he's talking to different Marines, and he's throwing the ball off the wall, and then all of a sudden he stops, and you hear him break into, "Bottom of the ninth, seventh game of the World Series, Kelly out there in left field for the Red Sox in front of the Green Monster, the wind, the pitch," right? And I think, you know, he builds the whole thing, two outs, bases loaded. The wind, the pitch. "It's hit. It's going to go off the Green Monster. The Red Sox are going to lose. Kelly goes back. Kelly. He jumped." Now, he throws the ball. He jumps against the marble wall, right? And he catches it. And he's like, and he's doing the narrative. Kelly. Kelly saves the World Series for the Sox. The Sox win the fucking series. Unbelievable." Now he's doing this kind of victory lap. And the Marines are sitting there laughing hilariously, right? Kelly. And then he just stops and he throws the ball to me and he goes, "Why are you guys screwing off? Get back to work. What do you think we brought you here to screw off all day?" And then he turns and he walks in his office and the Marines are just, you know, but that's kind of, he's a normal human being, right? He's a normal human being. And,
but he knows when to do that though.
Right. And he knows you need to do it too. You gotta let it breathe. But he's had two tours, in our lobbying office. We don't really lobby, but if I called it the Office of Legislative Affairs, you wouldn't know what it meant. So I'll call it our lobbying office, even though we don't lobby. It looks a lot, what we do is a lot like lobbying, but it's not, because we're prohibited by law from doing that. He was there twice. Once I think as a lieutenant colonel. I think he ran the Senate side of it, and then he came back and ran the whole thing as a brigadier general. So he is no stranger to that, right?
He knows the game.
Right. He's got the savvy of a merchant marine sailor and the personality that allows him to be comfortable in anybody's company. And he's a normal guy. And, so that's what the White House gets. And so all of his friends were like, not a good fit. But Mike, do you think he would have accepted that job unless he had some kind of agreement with the president that said, "Hey, if I'm going to do this, you have to allow me to do this"?
Yeah, that's, I was thinking through that. There's got to be some, like, you know, hey, Kelly, John, I need you to be my chief staff. You know, and that conversation takes place. Is, I'll do this, but this is what, you know, I'm not going to be a Prince guy, or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
And, I'm going to actually be a chief of staff. I'm going to run this, you know, and what he's got to do is he's got to get those people that have direct access to the president. He's got to get that away from him. Because it's great to have it, you know, as a leader, you want to have an open door policy. Oh yeah, come on in. But when you're the staff, that is horrible. You can't ever have that. Because the last thing you want is Lance Corporal John Bonas walking into the general's office saying, you know, hey, General, I got an idea. You know, and then the general takes it face value because, man, this is the guy that's hooking and jabbing.
Right.
And then he calls in the staff and says, hey, this is where I want to redirect the division. And you're like, your job is to bring everything back into reality for him. Say, that sounds like a great idea, but, you know, here's the problem with that, General.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I'll read you an email. Hey, Mac, it sounds like you work for the chief of staff. How do you think Kelly will do in that? That sounds like what you did. It is what I did.
No.
Dunford was the chief of staff, but what you do with those guys is you insulate them from all the craziness because they're focused. Their days are full. Their nights are full, and they can't have people with stray voltage and all this other stuff. You know, you have staff meetings in the morning, and they get different input. There's a schedule of the day. Everybody knows where they are. But the biggest thing is there's got to be a commitment from the people that are on that team, and that is his department heads, which would be his cabinet people, and the White House staff, and his White House staff, that we're going to push this thing in the same direction. And if you're not on board with that, and it doesn't sound like they were ever on board together, then you've got to go. And so to me, what we've heard since he was elected is this infighting between Banyan and the son-in-law, between Priebus and Banyan and all this. I mean, what Kelly needs to do is say, look, all that stuff gets checked at the door. Okay. This is the direction that he says we're going in, okay? You can hate each other. That's fine. Keep that shit to yourself. We're focused on policy and achieving his goals that he ran on. That's what we're about here. That's what we enable. That's what we do. If you're a department head, you've got issues, let me know. I'll get you in to see him. We'll sort this stuff out, and we'll continue to march. That's Kelly is that guy now in terms of coordinating really – in particular, the disconnects when you don't see things the right way, when somebody says the wrong thing. And to me, the first guy is that, you know, it's the Italian dude who was running his mouth last week. Hey, yeah, his direct access to the president. And I would be surprised if Kelly didn't tell the president, hey, look, he falls under me. I'm not going to answer for that idiot. And so it'll be interesting to see.
If everybody's seen those old movies where, you know, like the Viking or the whatever, the Spartan movies where everybody's below decks and they're rowing a boat and everybody's got an oar, and then there's the one guy at the whip with the little megaphone that tells them in the row,
right.
That's the chief of staff job. Because everybody's got to row in unison. Everybody. You get one guy that decides he wants to do something different or he knows better, then that boat is not efficient. Right. And that's right now the West Wing boat.
Right. Right. And to include the whole thing with the Attorney General. And that's another thing that'll fall under Kelly, like, hey, all right, what do we do with this? You know, what do we do with this?
Right.
And, you know, and that's really, John Kelly, you know, lived an interesting life, and it's about to get more interesting because, you know, you look at the president and his chief of staff and say, look, you're tweeting. Do you want him gone, or are you just putting pressure on him? And then we'll see if Kelly is able to, because it seems to me the president has expressed his frustration at things that his staff can't get done publicly through Twitter and the way he does his thing. It'll be interesting if he allows Kelly to tighten that thing up and, you know, Kelly has experiences that they don't, I mean, they look like clowns compared to him. Clowns. Life, the life and death experiences of being a leader. And talk about a guy that's calm under pressure. Kelly's, he's that guy. So again, everybody I spoke with went, and with the caveat of, I wonder if he'll allow him to help him
do his job.
Do his job and make, and Trump will be the chief beneficiary, of that. No doubt. When did you first meet John Kelly?
Oh man. I'm trying to think. Either was at LER.
Right.
I can't remember.
Did he left before you got there, or was he there when you got
yeah,
there?
Yeah, he was.
The guy before.
Yeah, Sword. I think he was there before.
Oh, okay.
Because I worked for Sword.
Tom Sword. I worked for him at IOC. He followed Alan there. Tom Sword.
Yeah.
Nice guy. The email. Mac, I chuckled this morning when you said the Marine Corps is a 911 force for the nation. Now throw the White House in that. Yeah, if we don't turn this into some kind of commercial, the Marine Corps isn't the marketing machine that I think it is. Come on.
Oh, yeah. This is a prime opportunity, man, to take full advantage of this whole. This is amazing. This is an amazing time to be a Marine, man.
Exactly. We can talk shit like nobody, man. Yeah, the White House, the DOD, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Yeah, that would be us. That would be us. So,
yep.
So interesting stuff. I'm sure the Army. Well, no, the Army never run the DOD. Not to my knowledge. But they probably. I don't know that anybody's ever had, like, you know, wasn't Alexander Haig was the chief of staff, right? Or was it for Reagan? And I'm sure there was an Army guy who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at that time. But not
always been Army guys as the chairman.
Yeah, but not the DOD. So, anyway. Mac, could you have Gunner go through his entire meatloaf recipe? I'd really like to try it. I got the third thing.
Okay.
What else does he do? Egg, does he put any kind of French bread in there? Kim last week was about he uses baguette when in his meatloaf. What does Mike do? So, Mike?
baguette's fine. I make my own seasoned, like, breadcrumbs. So, I like rye for some reason. I don't know why. But I use rye bread.
Okay.
And I put a little bit of butter on there, put a little bit of garlic salt on it, and then put it in the oven, toast it up. And then once it's all toasted, then I grind that up. But I like rye bread. Rye bread and meatloaf. I don't know why, but it's delicious. And so then the egg, and then I put, of course, it wouldn't be without Worcestershire sauce.
Okay.
So I put in some Worcestershire. And people want proportions. I don't know. I just, you know, I just kind of boop, 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 and then that's it. Salt, pepper, and then I put in, I think, like, I can't remember if it's A1, like a tablespoon, a couple tablespoons, or Heinz 57. I think it's Heinz 57. I put in a couple tablespoons of Heinz 57, because it's so damn good. And that's about it. And then it's the one, like I said, one third veal.
Okay, so one
third ground beef.
One third. You use rye bread, an egg.
Rye bread, but the rye bread though, get it, butter one side, put some garlic on it, and then toast it up.
All right. right, and then the egg, and then the Worcestershire sauce, and the Heinz 57, and you're gonna have to season to taste. So this might take you a couple iterations to get done.
Well, you're not tasting the raw meat, no.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It might take you a couple times to get it perfect, and so.
Right.
Just go over the lattice thing that you do on top, and then
okay. So then I take applewood smoked bacon, and then you take that out and put it on a big piece of parchment paper, and then put about 8 rows of bacon, you know, going one way, and then you take, then it's every other one. It's like braiding, and then you lift it up, put that in there, and you know, keep going. Until you make like a woven blanket of bacon. And then plop that down in the meatloaf pan. And then put the meat inside that. And then whatever, because you're going to have bacon overlapping the outside edge. Then you pull that over the top. And then done. Then I bake it at, 350 for, I have to look. Your basic baking procedure. And then while that's baking, I'm making the sauce. So I make, that's where I use Mahle mustard. It's the coarse ground mustard.
Right.
You know, it's got the seeds in it. Worcestershire sauce, a little bit of, this pepper sauce. And I keep forgetting the name of it, but it's the pepper sauce that comes in a bottle. It's got all the little pepper stuff in it. You know what I'm talking about?
Pepper stuff that comes in a bottle.
Yeah, it's all these little itty bitty peppers stuffed in a bottle, and it's got a vinegary taste.
Banana peppers? Peppercino?
No. They're really small.
Oh.
Hang on. Now you got me going. Look.
Mike's
it's called.
You can't tell Mike's a foodie.
And then I heat this up, and then brown sugar.
Oh, brown sugar.
And this
makes
is where you taste
better.
It. So this is called, Tabasco peppers. So there's the little Tabasco peppers in a jar, and they're all stuffed in there with the vinegar. And I add that. I add the Mahle mustard. That's the M-A-I-L-L-E, old style. That's the whole grain Dijon mustard. It's the really good stuff.
Ooh.
That, the brown sugar, the ketchup, and the Worcestershire sauce. And that's all seasoned to taste. And I put that on the stove, and I'm doing that up. Until you don't want the grain, you want to get it hot enough that it separates the brown sugar granules. So you don't want that granular taste. And then when it's about, I'm just guessing. Like I said, it's just your standard meatloaf cooking directions. After about an hour, I take it out, and then I put a nice coat, nice top layer, remove all the fat that's already, building up on the side. And I do that with a turkey baster, right? Suck that out, take all that fat out, and then I put all that sauce in there, and then let it bake at 425 for like 20 minutes to get that nice crust on the top. And then take it out, let it rest. You always let meat rest. Let it rest for like 10 minutes.
I don't like that. I don't like that though.
Yeah, man, you gotta let meat rust.
I know, but I don't like that. I don't, Kim tells me that. You know, you take a steak off, you let it rest, you let the juices settle. I said, I don't like that. I like to eat it hot. Off.
Yeah, you gotta do that.
He tells me, but
and
I
then,
don't hate it.
Take it out, and then I cut it up into the slices, and then I pour the rest of the sauce on top of it so it just kind of permeates in each slice. But I don't use onions. A lot of people use onions in a meatloaf. You can, cooked onions. I'd cook them beforehand, get them nice and translucent, and then add them to the beef. I don't. Mine's just strictly a pure meat. But I'll tell you, I would rather eat it the next day. Make it and then put it in the refrigerator so it's just kind of, that flavor just kind of gets stronger and stronger. And then the next day, I'm stuck in my face with that stuff. Sandwiches, meatloaf sandwiches afterwards.
I've never had a meatloaf
spice
sandwich.
Take a little bit of butter, put it in a pan.
All right.
Grill it up, so it gets nice and brown on both sides. And then what I do, Mac, this is really key here, I put a nice slice of Munster cheese, because, you know, that's not real strong, but it's just that creaminess to it. And then I put that on top, put a top over it, let that cheese kind of just melt down on top of that. And then that's where you take a nice soft, you know, roll and put it on top. And then, there you go. Don't have to add any sauce. Just eat that thing as a sandwich. The thing is delicious. Now you got me wanting to make meatloaf.
No.
But this week I'm making Spanish shrimp paella.
Ooh, paella. That's a big deal. And then, Mike, that's not like novice. Do you consider yourself an accomplished cook, or do you just, these are just things your grandma?
No, cooked. I can cook. No, I mean, yeah, grandma made paella, but she made it a different way. But I'm making just a standard paella. You're strict. I went out and had to go find the original, you know, like the real good Spanish chorizo, the hard chorizo. I got that right here. That's so good. 8 ounces of that. And then, got the shrimp. And then I have the bomba rice that's made for paella. I went and got the saffron needles. I have the Spanish, virgin olive oil. I got a Spanish paella pan that's made for paella. And then, let's see, this week I'm also doing smothered chicken. And then I'm doing, I'm making bratwurst.
Listen to you.
So I went out and bought.
You sound like Hazel, for God's sake.
Went out and bought 10 pounds of pork butt. So I got to chop that up, put that in the grinder, coarse grinder, and then put it in the sausage maker and make bratwurst. So I'm making, 5 pounds of bratwurst and 5 pounds of beer cheddar brat.
You have your own recipe, of course.
Yeah. Everything, I got it all. Then I had to go get, I got the casings right here, the natural hog casings, pickled, packed in salt.
Holy
50
shit.
Feet of them.
Holy shit, you have this whole secret identity that we don't really know too much about. I didn't know you were.
This is kind of the quiet side of me.
I didn't know you were that much of a foodie.
Yeah. Well, last night I made homemade mac and cheese for Megan, and she's like, "Oh my God, Dad, this is great."
What are the ingredients of homemade mac and cheese?
That's the easiest. Standard homemade mac and cheese, elbow macaroni, butter, milk, and buy that block of Velveeta cheese and melt that down into a double boiler with the butter and the milk, so it's nice and creamy. And then just pour that onto the noodles. And I mean, it's really simple, but it tastes a lot better. It doesn't taste manufactured. It doesn't taste like that box crap. But when you come out here, Mac, I'll make you my 5 cheese, bacon macaroni. It's got the fontina, the smoked gouda. It's got all the good cheeses in it. 5 different kinds with the crispy bacon in there. And I use the curly rigatoni. You'll go nuts. And then I bake it. So it's got that crusty top layer on it. And that 5 cheese, it's like something you've never experienced before. You get all those different flavors. It's fantastic.
All right. I want to read you a couple things. Your concept of the training facility could be part of the academy.
No, it can't be.
Why not?
You look at, because retention, it's been proven that there's not a lot of retention at entry-level type stuff when they're exposed to it for the very first time.
Right.
It's got to be a sustainment package that you build together for officers that you go gradually through.
Right.
And you introduce it to them over a slow process, and then you ramp it up. But academy stuff is not, it's not retained really well. Unless they do it, the replication of it over and over and over and over and over again. Because all they're doing is they're getting exposure. Remember, replication, for it to be what we call this magic muscle memory stuff, it's, you know, anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000 repetitions of it before it becomes muscle memory.
Just like athletic training. You've got to do it.
Yeah,
and do
exactly.
It. I mean, how often
do you see a professional athlete?
Yeah, batting practice every day, right?
It's touches on the ball, man. Perfect practice makes perfect, man.
Right. And so think about requiring police officers to do this, yet you don't really get any training. Your training is OJT. It's a recipe that's rife with danger. All right, let me read you this. Hey Mac, didn't hear you speak about this. Did you see this? And the answer is yes. I just got busy today. The president's going to present the Medal of Honor, the first one he will ever present to a 71-year-old Vietnam veteran. Who was a medic? Okay.
Yeah.
He was. He calls the battle the worst 2 days of my life. Found himself in the middle of a fight called the Battle of Hue Yan Hill. He was a medic, volunteered, drafted in 1969. McClanahan. Volunteered to enter the enemy kill zone to rescue injured comrades. As he did so, he was pelted with shrapnel from a rocket-propelled grenade. Voluntarily risked his life on 9 separate occasions to rescue wounded and disoriented comrades. He suffered wounds from shrapnel and small arms fire on at least 3 different occasions, but refused medical evacuation to stay with his unit and continued to brave enemy fire to rescue, treat, and defend wounded Americans. He described the shrapnel as a real bad sting. I was tending to 2 guys and dragging them at the same time into a trench line. He looked down to see himself covered in blood, which is the wound that prompted the contemplated evacuation from the battlefield. The company commander knew I wasn't going to go, McLaughlin said. Combat medic stuck around until the end of the battle, coming to the aid of his men and fighting the enemy, even knocking out an RPG position with a hand grenade at one point. In all, the Pentagon credits McLaughlin with saving the lives of 10 different members of his company and killing several members of the Viet Cong that were attacking them. Let me tell you, when you're taking out...
How did that get lost?
When you're taking out RPGs with hand grenades, you're in some serious shit, man. That is serious shit.
How in the world does that loss in the administration, bureaucracy of bullshit in Capitol Hill? Even that.
Yeah.
You know, war's over with. We're done with giving medals out. Just put that on the shelf. We'll get back to it another day.
What about his Medal of Honor? Okay, look, we don't have time for this. We're redeploying. Get me a gear list. Get me the,
Where's the alpha roster?
The alpha roster. Get me the, tip fit. We'll deal with that later.
Yeah.
Spent much of his life after he left the Army teaching psychology and sociology and coaching football, baseball, wrestling in South Haven High School. He retired in 2008.
You know, that's a big paycheck he's going to get, too. You know that?
For what?
Medal of Honor recipients get a monthly thing from the government. Like, you know, something small, like $250 a month or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, look it up. They receive some type of payment. Because, he gets an additional... You get something additional for being a wounded. I mean, because he definitely got purple heart. So now you're talking about what?
Holy how long ago? Shit! Okay, listen to this.
60-something years?
Yeah, let's just say 1970, okay? So 70 would make it 37 years.
Yeah.
So how many months is that? 37 times 12 equals 440 months. Okay, guess what he gets a month? A special Medal of Honor pension of $1,259 per month, above and beyond.
Oh, $1,000?
$1,259. So 444 times 1,259 equals $500,000.
Good for him, man.
Exactly. Boom! That's awesome. Now, I'm sure what they'll have to do is it hasn't always been $1,250, so they will have to go back and
they'll
do the math.
They'll go back each year.
But he's going to get a chunk of money. That's awesome.
Good
That's
for
awesome.
Him, man. That's freaking, that is.
And then, you know what?
That's awesome, too. I like that.
Then went back about his life. And, you know what? I've got to find a way to get him on or somebody in that unit because, you know what? I did, you know.
What unit?
It doesn't say it was an Army unit. I'll go to Military Times and find it, and I'll have the military stuff in there. But you know what? We did a week on me lie and the bad side of shit. And then late in the week, you know, you heard stories from Carl Marlanis about, you know, Marines that were cutting ears off, and he made them bury the bodies. And, you know, he said, when I walked over to check on them, they both had tears running down their face. And I didn't deal with that hardly ever again. And then you heard Ken Rogers talking about being at Khe Sanh, them going on patrol after the NVA left the premises, right, and looking for him and walking through a stack of bodies that was decomposing and one of the Marines grabbing a femur out of the pile and putting it in his war belt as they kept walking. And one of the sergeants walked up, one of the sergeants walked up to him and said, get rid of that shit. And he said that was the end of it. And so the reason that that stuff didn't happen very often is because you had guys who were well-trained, who were leaders, who did their job when people began to stray in that part. And so just as I would devote time to me lie and why that shit happens, you have to devote time to things like this and the noblest and best that you see when you don't know if you're going to live or die. You know what I mean? And when you're covered in your own blood and they say, hey man, that's serious. We need to get you out of here. And you say, no, I'm not going. I got to go back out there. You don't know when you say, I'm going to go back out there and throw some more grenades at guys shooting RPGs. Yeah. Mike, how far can you throw a grenade?
I don't know.
90 feet.
The second base. Yeah.
That would be from home plate to first base.
Yeah, I could throw that far.
Right. I mean, that would be when you throw beyond that. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, hand grenades aren't light. So, I mean, you're between home plate and first base from somebody shooting an RPG, probably closer, and you're throwing. Yeah, that's balls. That's selflessness. That's courage. It's awesome. And those are the guys.
Yeah.
Those are the guys. We've spent a lot more time with those guys than we have with people that urinated on bodies and things like that. And so I need to devote as much time because it's an awesome story. And then he goes back and turns a page, coaches football, baseball, and wrestling.
Yeah, that's amazing. Isn't good it? For that guy, man. That is awesome, dude.
That is awesome. His name is former Army medic James McLaughlin, South Haven, Michigan. So he will be awarded.
Kudos, James.
Yeah. Well done, doggy. All right, Gunner. Anything else you got to get off your chest now that we know you're the foodie of the program?
No, I'm fine, Mac. I'm not the foodie. I like good things.
Are you
things,
kidding
Mac.
Me? You love it. You are a foodie, and you know what? It's okay to be a foodie. It's a whole, much like prepping. Being a foodie is now between the food programs, the food channels, and every other thing. It's incredible. That industry, I wonder what it is and what it ballooned from to in terms of the amount of stuff that's done as a foodie.
Yeah. Hey, I got Will Constantine calling me.
Oh, yeah, he's calling you out on something. Trust me. He listens, then he calls me and chews my ass about stuff. So, anyway. All right, man.
No, he's probably got another question.
About cooking food, no doubt.
Yeah, probably. We'll see.
All right, Mike. Take it easy.
All right, talk to me.
There you have it. The Gunner on the only place you'll hear that guy, All Marine Radio. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap things up.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, A text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That'll do it on a Monday. Yeah, well, this program repeats itself momentarily, so don't touch that dial. If you're just tuning in, it's actually a quality piece of programming today. Yeah, how about it? I love that. So, stand by. More to follow. My thanks to Alex Holling, former Marine, and currently a contributing editor at SoftRep, for coming on this morning and talking celebrity politics. Kid Rock running for Senate in Michigan. The Rock making noises that he'll run for president. So we talk about that. We also talk about modifying the Constitution. Yeah, it's out there. It's out there. So my thanks to Alex for joining us. Also, my thanks, obviously, to the Gunner. Little Miss Foodie, huh? Yeah. The Gunner joins us. So contributing his expertise in a whole variety of Yeah, the Gunner's a unique guy. Didn't really want to talk about baseball, which makes me sad. But trust me, I'll catch up. I'll catch up with that. And, yeah, trade deadline today, Major League Baseball. Yankees are supposed to be close to getting a starting pitcher that will, in my opinion, make them the favorites in the American League East. So, it'll be interesting. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. And, again, if you are a person that's looking for a career or know somebody who is looking for a career and they want to go to a company that's looking for them, Tell them to shoot their resume to us. Yeah, Sonny Gray to the Yankees. That makes them the favorite. So, Red Sox don't have enough hitting. So, even if they get some pitching, it doesn't matter. They can't score runs. I thought they were better than they were, and then I watched them play. And I'm not... I do hate the Red Sox. I can evaluate. Like, you see a team like Houston play. There's one word to describe them. Wow. You see the Dodgers play. Wow. So that's really, but the Dodgers, I mean, they don't have a great record in the postseason. And Kershaw's back hurting. There was a big seizure in Los Angeles last week. But Dodgers handled the Giants over the weekend. It was sad to watch. So, yeah, that's what we're talking about, baseball. I will say, let me read an email about baseball a little bit ago. Mac, how stupid is baseball? They have their Hall of Fame stuff right at the trade deadline, I heard something on ESPN that I thought, well, that would make too much sense. As they celebrate their All-Star game, why wouldn't they do it in conjunction with their All-Star game? Why wouldn't they have a futures game played in Cooperstown that they would do in conjunction with the game? Nothing happens the day after the All-Star game or the day after that. They would have the media spotlight all to themselves instead of the stupid way baseball does it now. Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. They used to play. They used to have big league teams play in a game at Cooperstown. But that, in one of the collective bargaining agreements, that game was like... And my dad, that's how my dad got to see, went to Cooperstown the first time. The Hall of Fame game, they used to call it. And it used to be an interleague game. You had an American League and a National League game. And you went up to Cooperstown and were part of it and all of that. And then, but, you know, you flew from wherever you were during the All-Star break and you had to play. No, it wasn't during the All-Star break. It was some other time, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It was just another game on your schedule in conjunction with Hall of Fame induction weekend. So, but collective bargaining agreement. Done. All right. Have a great weekend. This program repeats itself starting right now. Trade deadline today at 4:00 Eastern time.